So apologize for the delay. Is Frank coming today?
No. Michelle.
Not so bad. As long as you have the answers, Michelle.
You know, it's funny about the last meeting, if you noticed, he tried to be here, right? He came in, I think he sat down for maybe, what, maybe 5 minutes before he got called away?
Yeah.
He tries.
Welcome.
Let the party begin. I'd like to call the meeting to order. The first piece of business is the approval of April 12th minutes. Do I have a motion for approval?
I'll move.
Is there a second?
Second, I have a comment.
Now we have time for comments.
Okay. Ms. Lester, I'd like to just make a comment about the style of the minutes. They see some changed over the years, and I think that we've fallen back to abbreviating things, and I think it would be better served for our supervisors and their staff if these meetings could be expanded to include comments and questions and what have you. Just for example, here's one comment about Ms. Friedenrich. Had a comment about something, and that's all it says. So we don't know what her comment was, but she said, but I think it would be helpful for everybody if these minutes were expanded more to include more content of the conversation.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Public Finance Advisory Committee member Suzanne Lester, CEO, Public Finance. I have a couple of comments about that. One, I understand where the committee is coming from, and especially when we're asking for the committee to take action on something, we're doing our best to reflect each committee member's concerns or comments for the record. I do understand that last month, and I was not here last month, it was an education session. So we did make a conscious effort to abbreviate them. And second, we are under some influence by an effort by the county to standardize all board and committee minutes, which even these abbreviated minutes don't completely comply with the county standards of abbreviated board minutes, where what's reflected is the actions, the vote and the actions taken. So we are trying to balance that. So I hear.
Was that from the Board of Supervisors or administration? Who's saying that you don't want to know what the record is?
Well, through the clerk of the board who manages, works is the Board of Supervisors staff.
Mm-hmm.
And that's trickled down to other boards and commissions as well.
And the logic is to save paper? Is that it? What's his point?
I think, you know, the logic is to focus on the actions taken by a board or committee. Now, I know that each board member relies on you as their appointee to bring to their attention if there's an issue or a concern or an issue that you think they need to know about. But I think, you know, we'll...
Are you saying it's up to the individual members to remember what they said during the meeting? These are all recorded, I assume.
Yes, and we do, we have made an effort. I haven't gone back and checked our website recently, but we do put those up on our website, the minutes and the recorded minutes. So
the concern is we're dealing with sometimes hundreds of millions of dollars here, and it's sometimes good to have a feel for how it got there.
Sure, and I think, you know, we can continue to commit to when your committee is voting, like for instance today on an item, we'll take that balance the other way and provide more detail on what was discussed and any concerns or comments.
Okay. Well, just for an example, Ms. Friedenrich, number 8 here says, committee comments. Treasurer, tax collector Friedenrich updated the committee on the successful tax drop, period. Mm-hmm. What was the success? I don't know what that means. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that's incomplete. I don't mm-hmm. think that does anybody any good.
And I might through the chair, vice chair, if I am I just because obviously you talked about me. I also sit on a couple other boards, and I do know that the county is really looking to standardize and look at those action items. Obviously, the recording is important. I'm probably one of the ones several years ago that said, gosh, when I review every single word, if you're not going to transcribe it, it's hard to get the exact thought for what the committee member said. So the downside you have, and that I was worried about, is you're trying to summarize some of this information in a manner that you could review in minutes, and you might get it wrong, and so actually the minutes go the other way. So I am a fan of the summary minutes and then having the recordings available, because I do think that there are some now, when I do make my treasury comments on this at the talk meeting, we do bullet point, but of course I'm there with my secretary, so she has me able to bullet point those. They don't have that advantage, and I, you know, may talk about a couple different things. I'm comfortable with this. Certainly if you wanted to reach out to me, if you see something that you think would be added value, I'd be more than happy to help. But I'm probably the fan of the summarized minutes and then having that recording. And I was pleased when all of the information went on the web, because I think that really is key. Someone really can then hear the whole meeting, because if you take one sentence out of context, it's somehow difficult, and it is hard for staff to figure out, if you have a 30-minute session on something, which comments to include and which to not. And I think that's where the county had, you know, a little bit tried to standardize, where it's really more of the action taken and perhaps some general flavor of it. So certainly I'm open. And again, the clerk of the board does report directly to the Board of Supervisors. She's appointed by the board, and that would be obviously, you know, if they choose that they want to have a change, or she does, that's certainly a great place to start, because that's where the county, I think, has been shifting. Not that it can't change, and it sounds like Ms. Lester is kind of doing a little bit of both, but that's just some thoughts on it from my perspective, is sometimes you get those things that taken out of context, and then you spend hours just going through the minutes. But, you know, I understand that we do want to get transparency of that information too, and if it's something important, maybe we need to say, I'd like to make sure this stays in the record. So if that's something that could help the group, if you say something that you think is important, maybe you say, I would like to make sure this is reflected in the minutes. And then when staff comes through it, they can make sure that comment you have is reflected, and that would maybe help a little bit.
I think there's a happy medium between the verbatim minutes and the complete summary. I'd like to see a little more verbiage in the minutes.
Well, I'll take Ms. Friedenrich's suggestion, and in the future I'll say, I would like this to be in the minutes, my comment. So how's that? Is that all right?
Any other comments?
And if you want more, Ms. Supervisor, go to the recording.
Yeah.
All right, okay. Mm-hmm.
I would concur with that and amend my motion to receive and file with the comment made by Mr. Hammond.
All those in favor of the motion as modified?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Hearing none, accepted. The next piece of business is the bylaw change for the committee.
And committee members, I might just introduce this by saying that I know this was discussed at the last meeting that I did not attend, but that there was a direction to include Mr. Hammond's draft proposal into the bylaws for the committee's consideration. So At this point, I'll turn it back to you, Mr. Chair.
Right. Has everyone had a chance to review the proposed changes?
Yes, thank you,
Sherry?
Vice Chair.
Put on my
Chairman
microphone.
Today, I got a promotion.
That's right, Chairman today, exactly. Chairman, you know, a couple of thoughts. I do sit on some committees and boards where we have public members and then we have ex officio members. And just some thoughts, and I meant to look at, you know, what do committees do, like Planning Commission, where they actually aren't elected by the people? I think one of the differences I see from the Board of Supervisors is they are elected by the people, so they have chosen to go out into the public realm, and not that someone who is appointed has not also. That's a difference. I'm comfortable with this. If that's the group, I have no problem with it. But I did want to just make the point that I think sometimes you may have a supervisor who appoints someone for their expertise in the area, not for their ability to manage a meeting. And hopefully, I think by saying that someone who's not interested in being chair would say that would
pop.
But I do
there.
Think that when the supervisors look at these, they're not thinking this person's going to lead a meeting and have to do those things. They're thinking that I want them on because, you know, Mr. Hammond, and not that he didn't do a great job as chair, but he also has a lot of expertise in the real estate area. So he is going to bring all of that information here. And I think, you know, that exemption where if you're really not interested, you just pass over should accomplish that. But I do think sometimes, you know, boards that are not elected by the people may have different rules from what I can see than just sequentially going through. So it was just an observation that I had. I'm comfortable with approving this today, but I did want to just put that on the table.
Okay. I don't think we've gotten a motion.
John? Oh, are we still discussing or you want a motion?
Oh, we get a motion before we discuss it. We got to get a motion in a second. Is there a motion for approval?
I'll make a motion for approval.
Is there a second?
And I'll second.
There's a second. Now we can have some discussion.
Okay.
Sorry.
It's okay. Tom?
Addressing Ms. Friedenrich's comments, that the issue that we had here with PFAC was that a member would only be chairman probably once in his lifetime, simply because
or her lifetime,
because the supervisors reappoint somebody all the time, and we want to rotate the chairmanship. Mm-hmm. And so, like, I'm in the 5th district, I would probably never be chairman again because of all the new appointees that come in that are there for a year or two. So I just thought we needed some order, which is self-correcting. If we don't like it, we can change it and right. What have you. The only I have a comment about the drafting. Mr. Daftrey, did you draft this?
Yes.
Okay. I think your paragraph 4B is fine. It's very clear. But I think there's a disconnect with Rule 8. I think the Rule 8 should refer back to 4B. In other words, I'm paraphrasing here, but this says if a chair or vice chair quits or drops out, then PFAC elects somebody else. It would seem to me it should go back into the rotation as described in 4B. Am I making myself clear?
Yes. Chairman Moore, members of the committee, we could add a sentence if you wish to go and say that in Rule 8 that the officer so elected to go and serve shall comply with Rule 4A and 4B.
Right.
If the chairman were to have to step down, then the vice chairman should move up, and there probably should be an election for the vice chairmanship.
In the sequence,
right.
Right, that's right. We're saying the same thing. That's what I'm suggesting, what you suggested. That's fine.
Would it be okay if we were to go and approve the amendments to the bylaws with a sentence in Rule 8 to go and state that the officer so elected shall serve for the unexpired portion of the term of the office, and the election of such officer shall comply with Rule 4A and 4B.
I would recommend that.
Yes.
I would recommend that.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. That's great.
I actually would kind of concur with that, the idea of it, but with respect to the verbiage, I think it should go to the, at the end of the first sentence. If you just add, "at a meeting of the PFAC pursuant to Rule B, Rule 4A and B," I think that should qualify the sentence and be done, rather than adding a new sentence. But that's a stylistic preference, so I'll leave that up to you.
Yeah, it's a controlling sentence, so that I'd be comfortable with that. Fury?
Yes, thank you, Chairman Moore. My only question that in bringing that up, because I looked at it differently and now I'm looking at it, is it's, when I look at it, it looks like a rotation now. And is it really an election if it's a rotation where it's set, because you don't have that, it's you know, it, I mean, obviously, if you vote no, you would be violating the bylaws. So I'm not sure, in this case, where we're making it so clear. I mean, I think most of the councils, the city councils that I know, they basically elect by the number of votes. So depending on where you are in votes is where you kind of go in. But we're setting it up with this. So it's just a thought throwing out. It just came up to me now. Is it really an election, or is it just the chair and vice chair will be established as follows? And then
I think
it
as
goes.
Confirmed by the committee, if there was a person that was due to come on, say, as the vice chairperson, and their attendance was sketchy or they were not participating, I think that the committee may say, you know, that's...
Right, but wouldn't we be in violation? It doesn't have an opportunity to say we can elect outside this. Is that right?
I think it's the very last paragraph. Yeah. It says we can make up whatever rules we want to make up. Take a look.
Well, it says we can choose not to elect any member under the rule, and I guess when I read that, it means that we don't have to have a chair or a vice chair.
No, at the end of it, there is.
By vote of a majority of the council, we choose not to
elect any member, chair, or vice chair under this rule. So you're saying that reads, that is the out that it gives us. See, I read it the other way. I guess I read that we don't have to elect a chair or a vice chair, but you're saying it's just any member. Aha. So, again, it's just
public
interpretation
member.
Of reading.
Public member.
You know, any public member, right, may choose not to elect the, maybe we should clarify to say, the member next in line under this guidelines at that time. Because, again, I read it differently, and now it makes sense. But, it's probably not a big issue. I certainly would still support it now that I understand the concept of it. But that's really if Mr. Hammond says, you know, I don't want to be chair. I'm up next. I'd like to not have it. Then they would elect someone else.
In the sequence.
Yes.
In the sequence.
Right.
So, again, just some thoughts on it. It sounds like it's a rotation, and you could choose to not be in the rotation if you didn't want. So it's a little when you are elected by your peers, but it doesn't sound like there really is any way you would not violate the bylaws by voting no. And that's kind of a little bit of a conflict. But anyway, I'm fine. I don't want to spend more time on it.
I tried to model this after the supervisor's format. This is the format that they use generally. Am I right about that? Except I know there's an exception, because I remember Tom Wilson, Supervisor Wilson, it was his rotation, so to speak, and they voted him out because it happened in the middle of the airport controversy. So,
as committee members, they do not have a rotation. I think it kind of, just by observation, it sort of naturally appears that way, but there is definitely not a rotation, and I think there have been times where it, well, again, just like you're proposing for this committee, where maybe a certain board of supervisor member had a heavy plate that year, and they opted not, or a number of reasons might occur, but it does seem to be based on seniority on the board, a number of factors where it has the appearance of a rotation, and then as you mentioned, sometimes political forces come into play.
Well, it's a political protocol, is what you're saying. So
yes.
So they follow it as a protocol, but not a bylaw. Okay. Well, anyway, I think we're making too big a deal about this. So
any other comments?
No.
Could you read the proposed changes as you have them?
Chairman Moore, if I can just have 1 minute, I want to write it out to make sure I have it accurate.
Sure.
For the record.
We can move on and come back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have it right now, if it's okay.
Good.
I would propose that Chairman Moore and members of the committee, that we just add a sentence, and I just want to be as clear as possible, so feel free to correct me if...
And where would that sentence be put?
Yes. That the end of Rule 8, I would like to add an additional sentence saying the officer elected due to a vacancy under this Rule 8 shall be elected to comply with Rule 4A and 4B.
Okay. Are you comfortable with that?
Yes, sir. That's fine.
Good.
That gets it.
We've had a time for a vote. All those in favor of accepting the change?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Passes. Next item on the agenda is the selection of Wells Fargo. Before we get down to the Wells Fargo, I have some questions regarding the summary of the financing of the county's Teeter plan. Oh, that's right. I'm sorry. We're not quite there yet about recusing our auditor. I have a question on the process.
Oh, do we have a motion yet? I don't think we have a motion.
For acceptance of the summary?
Yeah, for number four. I didn't hear a move and a second on number four.
Oh, I thought we did. Yes, we did.
Let's do it again.
All right. I make a motion. Tom Hammond makes a motion.
And I'll second.
Good. Now we can open for discussion. Eric, would you like to be excused at this point?
Yes, I have to recuse myself due to a conflict on number four.
Now, on the summary, attachment A, does everybody have that handy? Starts with evaluation criteria, financing the county's Teeter plan. There it is. I had a question, Suzanne, maybe you're the person. It sounded like there were two people from Eric's office or Frank's office that were on this and one other.
A committee member, Suzanne Lester, CEO, Public Finance. There was two members of our office and one member of the Treasurer Tax Collector Department, Sherry's office.
And what level were these staff people?
It was my director of investment, so it was my highest level in who reports directly to me.
Okay, and what about yours?
Two senior managers.
My concern is if we go down to Wells Fargo and you look at evaluator number one, they were all 5.0s, which is the top excellent, but then go to the proposer for JP Morgan. It goes from 2 to 4, and above that, the same evaluator goes from mostly 3s and 1.5. And it really, depending on the weights, say the first one, the quality of proposed structure of financing is weighted 30%. Mm-hmm. So those points are really significant, the difference between. And I thought in the past, maybe you did call to see if anybody from our committee is available to serve on this thing, because I think it's important.
And Mr. Chair, we usually do call, but for this particular one, the complexity of the Teeter program, we chose to rely on subject matter experts on the Teeter program, including Sherry's Director of Investments,
mm-hmm.
and then two senior managers of our department.
I would hope that anybody serving on this commission that's approving this Teeter plan would be qualified to sit down and review that.
There were a few complexities of the term sheets that I guess thinking about it now, how we would have approached it. For example, last month we did give an education session on Teeter because we felt it is very complex and there's a lot of moving parts. and I don't believe a teeter item had come before this committee in over 5 years. So we felt it was very important to provide an educational refresher. And then to, and then for some folks, you know, I'm not aware, you know, Min is new to the committee. I'm not aware of what her background or knowledge level of the teeter program is. In hindsight, what I would have done now is do that education process a few months ago.
Mm-hmm.
That way, committee members would have a knowledge base and a refresher. I didn't do that, and I apologize for that.
Well, that was my first comment. The selection of Wells Fargo, I don't know. I'd like this put on the record. Today's Los Angeles Times had an interesting article talking about Wells Fargo trying to rehab their name with advertising. There were some strong comments in there. It's going to take more than advertising. And if you switch over to the second newspaper, the Wall Street Journal, lo and behold, Wells Fargo is now has a problem with overcharging on fees for things. I'm wondering why we're doing business with a company who had to discharge their chairman or CEO doing this. Are we representing the county, doing them a good service by taking a company that has a lot of controversy right now?
Mr. Chairman, I do understand your concerns, and you know, we at the county have also read and heard about various bad events, bad business practices that have occurred at Wells Fargo. While they have occurred at other divisions within the bank, you know, we recognize it is one bank.
Exactly.
We do appreciate Wells Fargo, the representatives we work with have been very proactive in communicating with the county. I know they've been out to see the county finance office, our group, to talk about steps that they have taken to make things right with customers, as well as steps that they're putting into place to ensure compliance and consumer protections and things that so they won't occur again. I know because Wells Fargo is also the county's deposit bank, that they have met with Sherry, Treasurer Friedenrich, Treasurer Friedenrich has been in communication with the board, and she might have some comments on her communication with the board and with Wells Fargo.
Yeah. Is there a Wells Fargo representative here today?
Yes, there is. We have Scott Gorsman from Wells Fargo.
Not ready for him right this minute, but we'd like to.
Okay.
Sherry, had you seen this article today?
Yes, Chairman
Not
Moore.
Not the advertising one, the one about that there's more.
Right. No, I actually spoke with Ms. Lester last week, because it is an ongoing item, and certainly they are, as she mentioned, they have been our depository bank. Of course, we have been looking at, I think there's probably 5 different items that have come out over the last several years, which are not good. I mean, we've been talking with obviously we're on the government depository side about exactly what those impacts are. Every time something has come out, I've gone back to them and said, I need an understanding of what's happening. And of course, each time something new comes in a different areas, it's very right. disconcerting, because the tone starts at the top. And so Ms. Lester and I talked about, you know, obviously reselecting someone that has, I think this last weekend, there's a $1 billion settlement that
over a billion.
In the Consumer Federal Bureau that is being proposed. And I looked into the details of it a little, and I have not gotten the information from my from our contact yet on it. But I believe it's regarding the
it's a bifurcated
fee, the lockage fee for mortgage, the lock rate. I believe it's you know, overcharging for those. So most of the items that we have identified have not been in the depository banking side, where you're looking at the deposit But of course, they have been on the retail banking side, which is where they've been opening accounts. So we
the article today wasn't on the retail side.
No. This was on the mortgage industry side. I'm saying, you know, I was just kind of going back to when it first came out. The steps that we have taken, we actually were looking for new brokers several years ago when these first broke. And even though Wells was one of the finalists that we were considering, because of this, we elected not to do something new with the company because we felt that it was the timing certainly wasn't right and we needed to find out for more information. We are in the process of going out for RFP for our banking services. So it is something that we will evaluate as we go through the process. But we are in the middle of a depository agreement, and as Ms. Lester said, I'm certainly holding our relationship manager to task to make sure that as these items come up, they are giving me, certainly it has their spin on it, but it certainly gives me information, and then I can ask questions, and I have been then sending that information onto the board. I have probably the last few months, I have not sent a message, and it's in my job DAR to send them. Of course, now with this latest change this last week and coming out, that will certainly be included once I get the information from my staff. So I do, I talked with her about, you know, obviously with all of these items, you know, how has it affected this specific area? And I do think that having a representative here to talk about it would be helpful. And hopefully we'll talk about some of those areas that I think are important for us as a committee to consider as we look at, you know, at this. I mean, I look at the fee is maybe $14,000 difference. So you're not talking about a difference of fee, and maybe that doesn't consider the breakage of what's there. I'm not sure if that's included, but I do think that having them, you know, come up, obviously, I think would be important for us to hear from them what steps have been taken, what areas it has, and how that would affect the items that we're going, because it seems to be expanding from a few different areas. I mean, it started in one, and now there are a couple, and I didn't bring my notes on each of those, but hopefully they can at least provide us some updates. So if I'm available, certainly for any questions on the steps that we have taken so far, you know, for the committee.
Why don't we start before we get into this and have a representative from Wells Fargo come up and address us?
Good afternoon, Scott Gorsman, Wells Fargo Bank, Public Finance. Worked with Suzanne in the county for about 7 or 8 years.
And I've been Mr. Gorsman, what's your reporting structure? Who do you report to?
I report up through Wells Fargo Securities, which is just wholly owned subsidiary of Wells Fargo Bank.
Mm-hmm.
And we report up to a gentleman by the name of Phil Smith, who is head of government institutional banking, which is the governing body for the commercial banking services to the county.
Are you not at all concerned about?
Sir, I'm very concerned.
You know, I'm not so concerned about the ones we've seen. We know it cost you $1 billion. I'm concerned about 3 weeks from tomorrow that there'll be something else in there that may affect what we're doing here today.
Well, I wouldn't go that far. First of all, it's cost more than $1 billion. We paid $185 million fine in September of 2017.
Right.
We paid $1 billion fine just last month to the OCC and the Officer Controller of the Currency and the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau.
Right.
I'm sure there's been other costs, obviously, to the bank for these egregious errors. I'm not going to stand here and tell you that they're not appalling. They are appalling errors. They affected our customers. What I would like to tell you is that the mortgage rate lock error that the overcharges came as a result of our investigations. We started to investigate ourselves. We said, look, if this can happen, the account scandal can happen, then there might be other things. And we hired an outside law firm and Pricewaterhouse Consulting to go through the entire institution and to begin to look for practices that harmed our customers. The other one was the collateral protection insurance. So it was an auto insurance thing where, Treasurer Friedrich, that was the other item. That's where customers who had taken out an
I think it's in public. I'm concerned about what I saw today. Here's another case where there's overcharge with investments.
This one I am not familiar with, but I can tell you that it's really as a result of going through of us going through and looking at everything with the institution and coming out and telling the public about anything that harmed their customers. We are obviously, if we want to survive as an institution, we have to make things right. We have to make things right with our customers, and we have to go through and make sure our business practices aren't harming our customers in any way, shape, or form. I believe that we've been a very good service provider to the county. We work very hard at that. I believe that we're best suited to this program. We helped develop the current mechanism of the program.
For the taxable version versus the
Tax-exempt, taxable. Right. We actually, it was done as a commercial paper program prior
right.
to this.
Exactly.
And we recommended this type of a situation, and we looked at this at the county and the county's consultants to say we think this can save the county money. What we also did, the program was $150 million in size, and we came to the county and said, we don't think you need $150 million. We think it can be $100 million and satisfy all your purposes. So we've been trying to be very proactive to the county to save the county money, to be efficient, and to be a good partner with the county.
You're familiar with all of the documents that are here today?
That's correct, sir, yes.
I didn't see anything in this that we can get out of this if another episode comes up that there's a major discovery on bad doings on your part?
I believe there are some breakages in there for the county that you could escape from that. I would actually recommend Phil, your attorney, to provide that answer for you. But
can you have it?
I could.
Sorry, Phil.
That's okay. Phil Morgan with ORIC. I can double check. There's certainly the ability to prepay these notes.
Mm-hmm. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about
the breakage fee.
Right.
I'll double check to see if there's any fee to continue the commitment. Yeah. Even if it's prepaid.
What I'm trying to say is if, in fact, Wells Fargo is convicted, does another thing, we shouldn't have to pay to get out of something that we're dealing with bad characters.
Yeah. I'll double-check the note purchase agreement.
Yeah, thank you.
Mr. Chairman, if I may, I believe, and perhaps we'll be able to drill down to the exact page, that you know, we're committed for one year, without a penalty, but we would definitely need to RFP and have a new provider in place before we do that, because we would have to pay off the notes in full and then issue new notes.
I understand. And I assume that these other two bidders would be available.
Yes, and just you know, a couple of comments about the other bidders. You know, both Bank America, Merrill Lynch, and J.P. Morgan are qualified banks. Their bid wasn't as good. Bank America, Merrill Lynch was the most expensive. Merrill Lynch has its own history with the county that would probably be a topic of discussion if they were recommended. J.P. Morgan, their proposal, their term sheet was unacceptable. They requested the pledge of the county general fund revenue that is the whole point of us having the program. And so that's the reason why they were marked so low on their proposal.
Did anybody on the committee go back to the individual banks and say, not acceptable, what can you do? You're not the low bidder. We want you to redo your bid.
We did not, because we had a quality best proposal that the county was the evaluation committee was satisfied with.
It didn't bother them as far as what's going on in the newspapers and the fines they paid.
I won't speak for them. I mean, it bothers me. It bothers everyone. But we are satisfied with the communication and the service that we currently receive from Wells Fargo. They've done very well for the county on this TEETER program in particular. The previous commercial paper program and the letter of credit was very expensive right. for the county. And then just one item that occurred, and I talked about it in the staff report, where the county came out of compliance in our tax-exempt program, and Wells Fargo was very responsive and rapidly assisted the county to have us pay off the tax-exempt notes and issue taxable to get the county back in compliance.
Okay. Sure.
You know, one of the items I might maybe recommend for the next time we look at, I do see in the criteria is that, you know, the criteria is set a little bit by certainly the department, but it's structured on the criteria that the county really looks at. I mean, the county does a lot of RFPs. Its goal is to do all of these competitive bids, because then you're pitting the people who are the experts against each other. And I don't, you know, some of them, I know we did recently a printing and mailing vendor, and we looked at the governance, we looked at the the personnel, we looked at some of those items. I don't see that in here, where, you know, again, if I were a committee member looking at it, you are, you know, the county is very strict on, you get a bid in, you know, they don't want to be sued. So you basically follow the RFP and you follow it to a T. Of course, there's discretion on where you have the rating. But when I look through the ratings, I don't see something that covers a little bit of the area that you're talking about, which is more of the governance structure. I'm thinking of when we do our credit reviews on issuers and, you know, we look at all of these structures, what's happened with them. You know, I don't see that here, but I do think that, I know that certainly Michelle is here, McGeary, the CFO, this might be something that the county should, mm-hmm. you know, consider putting into our CPO standard, the CPO reports to the CEO. That might be something that would help, because here I don't know that there was a choice to even look at those types of headline risks, or what is that future risk if this company weren't to be here. Of course, we certainly hope that, you know, that would not happen with any of our vendors, but I don't see that financial condition here. So I think that would be certainly something that could be looked at. You know, it's obviously over the last, you know, 10 years, you have had some very large companies that have had things happen. They haven't survived. But it is, you know, very few of them, but it is something that should be considered. So I just wanted to bring that up, that when I look at this, I didn't see those factors that maybe we were talking about here actually built into this, and that would be something we can do for next time going forth. But, you know, I know I talked with my staff before he went in, and we talked about, you know, how important this program is. We really need to look at, you know, refining those. Obviously, the cost is certainly an important factor, but, you know, we do need to make sure that, you know, the county has the program, because it needs to be funding these. And as we said, over the last 5 or 6 years, we've made some fairly major changes in the program. It went from the commercial paper to this, and so it is a little bit different than it used to be. And again, as there are structure changes in the lending field, which is what we're looking at, you know, in this case, for us, we are borrowing the money, so we're probably a little bit in the driver's seat. So I think that is an advantage. We're not giving them money that something could happen to. We're the one borrowing money. Is there a call for them to ask for the money early if they needed money? I'm assuming there is not, and that helps protect us. So I think looking at it from our side, that's an advantage that I see. If something were to happen to them, obviously there would be the headline risk. It wouldn't be good. But in this area, we have the money, we have a contract, and if there's not something that we would be required to injure us, I'm not sure that injury would be as much. Not that certainly having that headline risk is not important, but I am looking to protect the county. And so those are just a couple of thoughts I wanted to put into the, you know, to provide to the committee from the things. Because Ms. Lester and I did talk about this specifically on Friday, and I wanted to make sure that someone was here that they could address some of those items about it, so that the board could ask the questions they need to. You know, for our perspective on the depository side, they are doing a good job. We're obviously very closely watching it, and we are just in our normal cycle going out for bid. So but it is something that, because of this, certainly we want to make sure we're looking at all those items. But they have been doing a good job on the depository. Obviously, that's where we are placing, you know, our money with them. We don't, you know, they're providing those services to us in that banking area, so we are, you know, keeping a close eye on it. But I appreciate the ability to provide some comments to the committee.
I have no reason to believe that Wells is not a strong bank, but if enough people, such as the county or other people, say, we're going to take our banking someplace else, that's where the problem starts. Mm-hmm. Okay, I don't want to kill a dead horse, but it's a concern. And also, the question will come back, if there is a problem, why were we doing business when we knew about it in the first place? So that's a question. How do you answer that? All right. Any discussion on the motion?
I do.
Mr. Hammond?
Yes. I'm trying to reconcile the issues here. I know you're, I understand your grid. All right, I got that. But I'm trying to understand the difference here and the deal points. And I'm not quite sure in reading this paragraph.
Which page?
It would be the breakage fee. That would be page 3. I'm not quite sure I understand the breakage fee. As I it says that you can only prepay on the first of the month. Now, why is that a problem?
So, committee members, and through the chair, because it's invested at on a LIBOR index, and LIBOR resets at the first of each month, if you make a principal payment mid-month, there's a breakage of the investment that could potentially incur costs for the bank. And so for us, why that's important, we generally make a principal payment twice a year at the end of the month. We get collections, tax collections, the delinquent tax collections, in monthly apportionments, July through December, and pretty close to December 30th, we'll make a payment. I mean, that's a timing difference. We could adjust it to make that payment December 1st or January 1st. Where it really impacts us is at the end of the fiscal year. Our tax apportionments generally come mid-month, and for the end of the fiscal year, we're trying to pay down principal to the maximum. And so if we were forced to pay on the first business day of June, our fiscal year end ends June 30th, we could potentially not be able to pay $1 million or more of principal that we receive in June without incurring a penalty from the bank. And Wells Fargo was the only proposal that we received that didn't have that requirement, and we understand that's a standard banking term.
Well, what is the breakage fee? How much is it?
I think it, well, and that was another thing that kind of was squirrely. Nobody had an amount. I think it depends. So we have this, it depends on what the cost incurred in, what are you paying at maybe June 5th at the beginning of the month, where there's more time in the month to that you'll incur an expense, or if you make the payment at the end of the month, very close to the reset date, there may not be as much of a...
And this happens whether LIBOR goes up or goes down? In other words, if it goes down, I would think there wouldn't be a breakage fee. Am I right?
I think the breakage is because the investments are made...
On 30-day increments.
Right.
All right, so...
Could we ask the Wells Fargo representative sure. to talk about the breakage fee?
David, do you want to... I have the same question, so I don't have to answer myself.
It could be thousands of dollars. It's not... You know, hundreds of thousands of dollars by any means. It just be thousands of dollars. But as Suzanne said, it's how much, how early is prepaid.
Is there a percentage that you start with?
No, it's not on a percentage basis. There's a so let's just say the note is outstanding for $25 million.
Right.
We match with LIBOR in terms of our funding source for that $25 million.
Right.
And then there's a spread, which is our income on
right.
on the note. If the payment comes in and it's $5 million and it comes on June 5th in that example, so we'll break our contract, our $25 million contract that matures on July 1st. And so there's 25 days of contract breakage on the contract. So that could be several thousand dollars. That could be $8,000-$10,000. If on the 29th and it's $1 million, then it's a couple hundred dollars.
Yeah.
So it really depends upon
how much,
how
early. So it's not a fixed fee to start with. It's just depending on what.
Well, it's just our match. It's just our match source of funding.
So what you're saying is that you borrow, the bank borrows money, say on monthly terms, or they go into the commercial paper market or Fed Funds market, whatever you go, and you make 30-day contracts. And if we pay off on the 5th of the month, then you have to break your contract and we have to pay the difference. And that's the break. That's the definition of the breakage fee?
That's the definition of the breakage fee, but we don't charge you. We're the
No, 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 no. Sorry. Okay, but I'm just trying to figure out what other people want to do.
Right. I want to emphasize that we don't. Please. Give us one tally up there, please. yes, that is correct.
That's
but
the definition of the breakage fee.
We don't actually, because of...
But even if you have to go out and break the contract and it's in your favor, do these other banks still charge a breakage fee?
But it's not necessarily in our favor. It's a contract that's broken. What we're doing is we're applying that as a cost of funds. So just think of your business. You have your bank account has $100,000 in it, and you want to put the $100,000 towards your business in the most efficient manner. So we have to borrow money, in a sense, from Wells Fargo Bank ourselves, and we have to borrow those funds and provide that to the county for the TEETR program. So we have to justify there has to be a return on that money. So when you borrow money for 90 days and it's only out for 45, that's a breakage. That's a contract breakage. Now, this specific is the LIBOR match that goes along with a taxable borrowing. In the tax-exempt borrowing, there's no such thing. If the county were to, in the original TEETR program that was tax-exempt, there was no breakage fee because there's no breakage.
Right.
So it's just a kind of a way to match fund.
So.
Sorry, I don't.
Well, okay. I think what you just said is that your contract that you borrow money from, or your subsidiary, whatever you want to call it, they charge you to break the contract, regardless of whether LIBOR went your way or didn't go your way.
Correct.
So they charge you a breakage fee.
And in this Correct. Case, it resets once a month because it's 1 month LIBOR that Right. it's based
I understand,
on.
But so in other words, there's a charge for breaking the contract.
Correct.
Even though you're in the money?
Even though you're in the money. There's a charge for saying that you're going to borrow $25 million for 90 days and you only borrowed it for 45 days.
An opportunity
or in this more example, June 5th as opposed to July 1st.
All right, so it's pretty. So you're telling me that if we have $50 million outstanding and we repay $10 million on the 15th of the month.
That could be $4,000 or $5,000.
Right. And according to Suzanne, the big risk comes at the end of the year when you want to pay down your principal because of the fiscal year. But if it only happens once a year, is this really a big deal, this breaking fee?
Well, I mean, it could be. In this case, it's it occurs at the end of the year, and if it's $4,000 or $5,000, I mean, it's something. I mean, the other banks are going to charge it. Wells Fargo is.
Well, I'm
not.
Just trying to figure out what how big a deal this is. Mm-hmm. Okay. The other question I have is that why do you have such an objective about pledging your fees and your interest that you collect on your collateral?
Because committee members, that's a significant general fund source.
Well, I understand, but it's not frozen, is it? In other words, you can still use the interest income as you receive it.
It is frozen till the end of the year. The penalties and interest first flow to what's called the Tax Losses Reserve Fund that's managed by our auditor controller, and that fund is required by statute to pay taxes. So if the treasurer tax collector auctions a delinquent property and not enough is collected in the auction to pay the taxes, the tax loss reserve fund comes into play. So the required flow is first to the tax loss reserve fund, where it sits for the entire year. Then at the end of the year, the auditor controller calculates what the new TEETR delinquency is, and then the requirement of the tax loss reserve fund. fund is 25% of delinquency. So once that is satisfied after that calculation, after the end of the fiscal year, then those penalties and interest are released to the general fund.
I thought Ms. Friedenreich mentioned in our last meeting that the number of properties that were taken back and then sold at auction that didn't cover the taxes was minuscule, if I recall.
That was immaterial.
Immaterial.
Yes, Chairman Moore, that is. But I do think another factor to consider, as I know that we receive in dollars from property taxes, and there are periods during the year when we are not allowed, when someone has double paid, to actually, the auditor control will not release those refunds. And I don't know the mechanics of it, but it's because of there's not enough funds in these accounts. Now, I'm not sure if that's related to this or not, but I do know that someone who's paid us, we want to get those monies back. And there are times when that has been delayed because of something to do with, you know, those cash in which accounts. And again, I'm not sure if it's with that.
Sherry, that's unrelated to the pledging of the right. interest. I mean, what you just
the penalties and interest income, probably. But if we have to pay interest on those, I'm not sure. I'm actually not sure.
Well,
but we do have, to get your question, yes, we do have minuscule that are paid that are not paid for taxes, yes.
In fact, the count, because we've been asked by the credit rating agencies, the county has never had to access the tax loss reserve fund, but it's in statute. We have no discretion in that area. But those.
What's the magnitude of that fund?
It's a little over $6 million at this point.
But that's got nothing to do with pledging your interest in your future income. I mean, you have to do the tax loss reserve, whether you pledge your interest income
right.
or not.
So we couldn't release it to J.P. Morgan right away, but that is discretionary funding that the Board of Supervisors makes the decision on how to use the penalties and interest, and we would object to the requirement of having to pledge that.
When you say pledge it,
meaning
you pledge it for do you freeze it for a certain period of time?
No, meaning that the only purpose it can be used for is to pay down the debt. So we do pledge those base prior year delinquent taxes. We can't use those collections for any other purpose than to pay the principal on the notes.
The interest goes to principal?
No.
Okay.
No, only the base tax, so the actual.
All right, so that has to go to the notes. I understand.
Yes.
That has to pay down. But the interest income and the delinquency fees come to you right away. They're not frozen in any way because they're pledged.
Well,
you know, what you're pledging is future interest income and fees. Is that correct? You're not. You're on a current basis, you get the interest and fees.
No, well, except for the exception.
Except for the reserve.
That it has to sit in the reserve until the end of the year when the new reserve requirement is calculated. Then it can be released to
Well, I'm assuming that the two big deal points here mm-hmm. are this breakage fee and this pledging of the interest expense and the fees. And there's some minor differences in pricing. I got that too. But, I mean, I'm trying to figure out how big a deal these two issues are.
Well,
I mean, enough to tip it away from Bank of America?
Well, I mean, there is the expense, but, I mean, we've spent a lot of time discussing Wells Fargo. I sense that there would be equal, if not more, of a discussion to be had if we brought a proposal that included Merrill Lynch. Now, if they were the best proposal, we would recommend that, and then your committee, and then ultimately the Board of Supervisors could make that decision.
Are you referring to the Merrill Lynch that sued us during the bankruptcy? Is that the issue?
And that we sued them.
Or we sued them? Is that the issue? That was 15 years ago.
23 years ago.
I mean, are we still fretting about that?
Yes.
We are.
Yeah, not me personally, but our elected officials and board members.
Mm-hmm. All right. Okay, I have a couple The question I have is that you were talking about $150 million. You've gone down to $100 million, and I see that your note outstandings are $58 million. I mean, shouldn't you make this borrowing? We're in a huge boom time. Sherry doesn't have a lot of delinquent taxes. Shouldn't this be $75 million as opposed to $100 million?
Well, we, committee members, we have looked at that, and just to give you some perspective, is that back in probably the worst period as far as these delinquencies go in the Great Recession, we had a $300 million authorization, and we had $210 million in delinquencies outstanding. And the escalation of the delinquencies occurred very quickly. And at that point in time, it was very difficult to get credit. Credit wasn't available. Increased capacity in credit was not available, and even to the county. But over time, as the real estate market recovered and delinquencies decreased, we moved to reduce the authorization to first $200 million, and then we went to $150 million. And then we've gone to 100, and you know, at this point, you know, even looking back just a couple of years ago, once we purchased those delinquencies, if you look at that table on page 2, you know, we're up to, you know, 70, 83. I think we feel like we're at our low point. Even though the percentage delinquency is remaining low, the roll continues to grow. So even if you have a delinquency that's a certain percentage, if it's on a bigger base, you might have.
So you're looking at it as an insurance policy, the extra $25 million?
Yes, and we feel like it's prudent.
Okay, next question is changing subjects. You have this is a 3-year note we're talking about. When do we have to have this in place? When does our existing facility run out?
July 30th.
July 30th. Okay, so we have a few months. Okay. And would somebody explain to me why the administration closed the SLGS window?
It was the federal government.
That's correct. The federal government.
Was it Treasury that did it?
Yes.
Because it was a loophole? Was that it, Sherry?
No, what happens when the debt limit goes higher? What they do is normally you can go to the window. We've actually purchased things from the Treasury window there in these slugs. And as the debt limits gets closer, they stop accepting any deposits. And actually, at some point, they convert your demand deposits to what they call a CD, so that basically it becomes a different instrument. So it really is based on the debt. They need to have available debt to make ongoing expenses, and again, they're not allowing someone else to tap in and increase that debt limit, because every time someone buys it, it's reducing that amount that's available for others. It is certainly used in a lot of bond refundings, where you've got to put you can actually go to the slug window and you could say, I need a rate of 1.1, and they'll pay you, as long as it's below the market rate,
right.
They will allow you to, for arbitrage purposes, you know, to actually match up that escrow with that amount. So it's very popular, and of course, I'm sure it's used all the time, so they have to be very careful about, you know, closing it early, because to make sure they have enough. But that's really related to the debt ceiling.
I have a question on the bond rating. What are we currently at in the market?
The county's bond rating is AA+.
And that's what you're anticipating we're going to go out at?
Well, this is a private placement.
Right.
I understand, but the...
So the penalties in the contract for if the county falls below AA-,
right.
at the very beginning of the contract with Wells Fargo, that was what the county's credit rating was, AA-. So
but it's now AA+.
It's now AA+. One of the proposals, and I don't have it with me, I can't remember which one of the other proposals did have additional costs if we fell below our current rating of AA+.
Okay. Mr. Hammond, any other questions or comments?
I have a comment. and I don't know what to do about this. I'm really concerned about. I'm not persuaded about the two deal points here, and which are this breakage fee and issue. And I know there's a difference in fees, but it's a nominal amount in terms of the size of this deal, in terms of the profits of the Teeter program. I don't want to get in the way of hurting the Teeter program because it's been going on since as long as I've been around, and I know it's very important. But I'm really troubled by this Wells Fargo thing, and I just wonder if it's a supervisor's call, but I would certainly voice my concern about the Wells Fargo thing, and I'm not convinced about the deal points here that swayed us into. I know this is a very mechanical, supposed to be objective rating system. I don't fault it. But I just think that there's a thing going on with the Wells Fargo thing in this country that's, I think it's more widespread than most people think. And I feel very uncomfortable with it.
Any other comments?
If you may entertain, please excuse me for the ignorance. I'm not, as you said, familiar with the Teeter program as my colleagues on the board here. But if you were to look at page 3 on the agenda, it seems like the interest rate that's charged by Wells Fargo for the utilized amount of $60 million is the lowest, in fact. But if you look at the basis point for the unutilized portion, it's the highest. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if Sherry already did the math and she already voiced it or identified it, but I don't know what the difference would be in terms of what set off. I mean, in the end, do we actually benefit from that economically? Does it make sense, do you think?
Through the chair, I think the calculation at the bottom is the sum of the two costs. So I think there's the cost for the first one, which is the 1.4. It's looking at Wells. They have the rate of 2.34 for the what's utilized, and the 1.404 is the cost estimated. And then the 25 basis kind of standby fee. The cost for that, as you could see, is since it's the highest basis fee, is $100,000 versus the other two, which are lower. And then the total cost of the program, just on a fee basis, assuming that you use it, is about $100,000. Less than the Bank of America Merrill Lynch, and just about $14,000 less than the J.P. Morgan. I think one of the things the board looks at is, again, is this an isolated situation with, Ms. Lester talked about, the Great Recession back in 2008. Obviously, the entire market had an issue, and it was very difficult to get credit. We're looking now at a single company that has had very poor behavior. And, obviously the county thinks, at least my perception is that, real estate is going up, but it is going to go the other way. I mean, we are probably going to have lower rates going forward. Collections probably are going to go down, perhaps. We're at really historic highs. How long can that continue? But I think that one of the things the board looks at is, what is the ability to get out of this contract if we needed to? So I think that's a key point for the board. It has been shown that it does appear that we do have the ability to get out. So then the next question is, what would be that ability to get into something else? And I think, looking at what the board is, or the committee is looking at, is it an isolated event, or do we think this would actually extend to the banking industry where we wouldn't be able to get credit for someone else? I think that's an important fact, because that would allow us the ability if we determine, if the county determines that it is no longer appropriate for that, and what are those implications on it? They are an existing vendor, so it's not if it was a new vendor, as we did, I would say definitely we aren't familiar with their experience. It would certainly be not a recommended action at all, because you're going into an area that you really don't know the vendor very well. Certainly the county has been dealing with this vendor, so you have some knowledge of the types of things. And in this case, because you're actually borrowing money, you're kind of, like I said before, you're at a little bit of an advantage. It's if something happens to them, obviously, it's not like you're trying to get your money back from them. They have, you know, they have loaned you money. And, you know, I think the board would look at is, you know, what is that economy around that? And certainly if the economy does go into a recession, would the Fed start lowering rates to ease credit? Whereas right now we're in a tightening phase because, of course, they do feel the economy is strong enough to handle, you know, the higher rates that they believe are important. So I think there are other factors that are important to look at with that. I am also very concerned, as I mentioned, about the types of activities that now keep cropping up, and it is certainly something that we need to look at, you know. But I think in this case, it appears there are some checks and balances that are behind it. You know, there is the ability, and I think that certainly, you know, our public finance should maintain contacts with others if there is something that we believe would have to happen. Or, you know, at any point, theoretically, it's not an exclusive agreement. The county could decide to prepay and go into something else. So maybe it's something that we get an update from the public finance in, you know, after it's issued. We want to get an update what happens, you know, where are we on the economy. But I don't, you know, I think that there are some protections in place on this side of the aisle, that it's not the whole economy that we're looking at going down. I think that there are some things that hopefully, and if the economy looks like credit is going to be tough, you know, we may want to reevaluate and take a look at some of these. But it is an important program for the county. You know, I'm pleased to say we keep coming down. But of course, what comes down generally is going to perhaps go back up. So I think we need to have a little bit of that cushion built in to protect the county, because of course, it's when you don't have it is when you need it the most, usually. So you are going to pay a little bit for that insurance, and it is unfortunate it's a little bit higher. Obviously, everyone has to price out how they see things. I'm sure that they've tried to sharpen the pencil of what they have, but, you know, is that something if, you know, again, looking at it, but I do think that certainly it's a program that is a different program than the issues, because we are in the driver's seat on this one. We're the loaning side. We know up front exactly what the fees are. It's not a fake account that, you know, someone's signing us up for on the bank. I mean, that could happen, but we know exactly what we're doing, and we know the fees we're paying. And of course, this last one that came up, it's about, you know, overcharging for those fees. We have to decide if this is overcharging. And in this case, we've gone out to competition, and yes, the standby fee is higher, but the other fee is lower. So at least we have, I think, a good view of what those fees are. We're making a decision based on good decisions, and I think that would speak to the record that we have evaluated it. We've had Wells Fargo come up and talk about those things, and of course, they, you know, he's a representative of the company, and I think those are important things that we need to consider. So if that helps at all, I think there are some protections in place.
It doesn't sound like we've gone back to them or the other ones to ask if there's any additional cost reduction.
Well, I think the difficulty is you have an RFP, you've put it out, you've got criteria. You would invite, not that I want to talk about that L word, but that L word that the attorney over there would be talking about. And so I think you'd either have to cancel it and re-go out. I think, and at this point, is there an ability for us to do that? And again, you've got the criteria that's written. I think these are all good points. And I saw Ms. Lester putting these points down for next time, that we probably need to look at some governance and some of these other types of things about the company. And I encourage certainly the county to consider even doing that, because, you know, these are probably important for every evaluations. Maybe it's just 5%, but I think that having some of that is important. So I think some great information has come out of this, but I think that we would be going into some very difficult territory if we deviated significantly. And I see our, you know, county council just nodding. So that would be my thoughts on it. And certainly, you know, I think we just need to get updated regularly. And I think Wells Fargo is going to need to, you know, come back periodically to provide us some updates and additional information. And again, it's that due diligence you do. If you just put your head in the sand and 3 years later we pop back up, that's really not going to be good. I think we need to have this. And of course, it will go to the board. I think you should express your thoughts to each of those members, your representative. And then certainly the board, of course, is going to have some input from me on some of these Wells Fargo input. They may have their own questions, and Wells is going to need to be there to accommodate those questions. And I think that's important. I mean, we are the advisory board. Obviously, we're making that, but maybe we, you know, you know, it's, you know, indicating that we are still concerned about those types of behaviors, and, you know, that that is something that, you know, we should have a have some reviews, and maybe at the board level even have the reviews.
Thank you. Anybody else have any comments? I think we've.
I do. I'd like to respond to Mr. Hammond. Rich's comment. I think there's one thing that we, in your comments, we've overlooked, mm-hmm. and that is in 2008, 9, and 10, most of these banks, these big banks, including these three that are listed here, I'm not saying one's more guilty than the other, but there is a long history of the banks reneging to their creditors. I mean, to their borrowers, excuse me. And so it may be to the point if we decide we want to breach, or not breach, or break this deal because of whatever reason, bad times, economics, what have you, I think there's probably an equal amount of risk that comes from the banks themselves in reneging. And I've been there personally. I can give you examples of this happening. For 5 years it went on. And so these banks are not pure. And these deals are not in place for good. So I think that should be called to the attention.
And if I might, through the chair, just one other comment, because I think you make some very good points. You know, after that, Basel, the Basel III now has more. You have to keep more money today to protect. But, you know, I also know in reading articles that there are off-balance sheet financings that are going on. And so it certainly is something that I think Mr. Hammond mentioned that certainly is a risk. And could it take down, you know, the banking industry? Are there things that are there that certainly need to be evaluated? Because there certainly are not just this bank, but others. I was kind of focusing on the risk of this bank. But you're correct. For financial institutions in general, there are other things that are out there, no question.
I'm less concerned on this bank from the standpoint of their investments as to their goodwill that the people that they bank with decide to go someplace else. And that could be catastrophic for them. So I think it's time for the vote. All those in favor of recommending to the Board of Supervisors selection of Wells Fargo, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All those opposed?
Opposed.
Passes 3-1.
And I didn't know that in the motion we didn't talk about that, you know, with periodic updates on the program. I don't know if that could either, you know, we talked about that due diligence of looking at it, which I think is an important part just because of the circumstances. Now, obviously, we're approving it to go forth, but that could be maybe a direction to the public finance.
Could we ask Wells Fargo representative the next time you're sued for, let's just say, $10 million? That you'll notify us, that we don't have to search the Wall Street Journal, or we'd like to put the emphasis on you to let us know that.
I would commit to coming back here as Ms. Lester deems appropriate to give you a progress report. Actually, I've printed out our corporate progress report, which I can hand to you if you'd like, but absolutely.
But I would want you to come back if there is.
I'm at Ms. Lester's call, and tell me when the meeting is.
If your committee wants to give us the next interval, you could direct us to.
No, I'm suggesting that there's another situation that comes to light where Wells has been sued for malfeasance. We'd like to have them come in and talk to us. I'm saying,
Chairman Moore and members of the committee, just in regards to the items which are on the agenda today would be for approval of Wells Fargo Bank. So I think that the vote for today is a 3-1 vote for their approval.
Right.
But as an aside, just for what the committee can go and take action on upon, I would just go and say, as an aside, Wells Fargo has noted that they will go and provide regular intervals if either requested by the committee or if they feel that it's something significant, that they will bring it forth
that's
to the committee
for
it. But that's not a formal action upon the committee because it's not on the
committee
law and so forth.
I understand it's a directive, and I take it as a directive, and I listen to Suzanne, and I'll be here.
Thank you. Are there any comments from the public that would like, whether on this matter or anything else, for PFAC? Any committee comments? And I think we stand in adjournment.